Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So first off, I always like to be very honest with our audience. I was out of town for this weekend, the first time I left Boston basically since March. I did watch Calcio, but not as much as I usually do. So I just always want to be upfront about that. So we will have a winners and losers segment, not as long as other ones. I kind of want to stick to the big storylines and what I got to watch over the weekend. We do have two guests today, and we are recording this on election day here in the US. It's around 8 o'clock in the morning. Alex and I are recording. So for election day, I did bring on our friend, Real Don Agnelli. Don't worry, we talked Juve with him. I think you will really enjoy that. And then our other guest is one of our regulars, Enrico Passarella. You know, on this podcast, we really like to cover the entire league, not just the top team. So we're going to talk a lot about the mid and lower table with Enrico, catch up on that. I know last time we had issues with Enrico's audio that were on me, not Alex or him. Much better this time. So I think you will enjoy that interview, and of course, we will do a segment for our patrons. So, Alex, I have to say, Milan's unbeaten streak continues. They have not lost this season, have not lost dating back to a while ago. They are in first place in Serie A. I think they have been, I think it's fair to say, they have been the most consistent team in Serie A. And you could make the case that this is not just this season, it's what since pandemic calcio came back. So I think there's definitely a lot of reasons to be optimistic if you're a Milan fan. So let me ask you this. I was taking a look at their schedule recently, Alex, and I want to ask you, where do you think it's possible that the unbeaten streak is going to end? They're going to host Lille in the Europa League. They're going to face Hellas Verona. They travel at Napoli. Then they play Lille away. They host Fiorentina, they play Celtic, and then Sampdoria. That is their upcoming schedule. Zlatan, and of course, on absolute fire. Romagnoli is back. The team is doing really, really well. Do you see this streak continuing for a while, Alex?
Good question, David. I don't, but that's only because I just see a slip-up happening. That's all. I see Napoli getting them three games from now. So I think they're going to be fine against Lille. I mean, unbeaten, of course. So they don't have to win.
Yep.
They'll be fine. They won't lose against Lille. They won't lose against Hellas Verona. They should win that. And then against Napoli, I think they slip up. And Napoli is a team that can't put together consistency right now. I think we know that. But they still do have a decent spirit about them, and I still think Napoli can punch you in the mouth if you're not ready for it. They have a good goal differential. They're fifth. You know, they got 11 points. They haven't been bad or anything like that, and they're a bit newly constructed. Not totally, but Osimhen up top, and it's a bit different now. So I think Napoli, they're at home. I know that doesn't mean too much these days, but I think Napoli get Milan there. But I'm not saying then the streak doesn't continue or start a new one after that. Lille, Fiorentina, Celtic, Sampdoria, Sparta Prague, like Parma, Genoa, like they could have a really nice run even if they do have a quick slip up. And if they did have a nice run after a slip up, boy, would that tell me a lot about them, right? They face a little adversity and then they go back on another big run. So if the slip-up happens soon, like I'm predicting against Napoli, I think we learn a lot about them because they still have a lot of winnable games after. So that would really tell us, oh, okay, everybody has a slip-up, but they're winning the games they're supposed to. And David, if they don't have the slip-up where I'm predicting, and they're just handling the teams that they really should, at least on paper, or at least not losing to them, well done, because that's how a team becomes a team. It's winning the games that you're supposed to, so you have less random hiccups and people are a little less paranoid. It's when you could lose to anyone, but also beat anyone, where you feel like you have less structure. So yeah, if they can take care of the majority of these games coming up, plus the fact that they are in first, I mean, they could already have a much better season than really anyone predicted. I mean, the majority of people predicted, at least. And I'm just absolutely astounded by how good they've been. And I think, obviously, that starts with the man up top. I just spoke to Asmir Begovic again. And he, of course, was brought in with Zlatan. And it's just ridiculous, David. Every time we're doing a pod now, we're talking about the latest ridiculous development from Zlatan. Like, he's getting better with age. It's Benjamin Button. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible. And I want to give us credit, a lot of people credit. I'm not saying we were in the minority with this take, but we said above all, Zlatan joining when he joined, above all, it would make that place a more serious place. It would make the club a more serious and more accountable place. And I certainly didn't forecast him being this good actually on the pitch, but you and I were both saying, no, that could be pretty good, bringing in a guy who still works that hard with that work ethic at that age, and Begovic too, obviously to a lower degree. That could do so much for the culture of that club. Because, David, for a while, you remember, I was throwing Milan right there with Roma as a club where, like, I didn't trust them. I had a bad vibe about them. I was quite negative on Milan for a while. And just, boom, I now, all of a sudden, it's not because they're in first. I just get that, well, that helps. But I just get this whole new vibe. Zlatan's a huge part in it. But credit to all of them. So, yeah, I'm going to say they slip up against Napoli, but as you can hear, my tone is still not very negative about them. So that's my take on all of it, David. And I want to ask you, are you starting to believe they're serious contenders for a title? And would you take them over Napoli, speaking of Napoli?
Yeah, so nice job, Alex, on the analysis. I agree with a lot of it. Look, you know, there are a couple of reasons where I really am starting to believe. And if they can get past that game against Napoli without losing, I don't even say they have to win it. If they can get past that game without Napoli, then yes, I am definitely going to believe. I've said for a while that, you know, for a team to win the Scudetto after not being in the Champions League for a long time, I wanted to see what the most recent example looked like so I could compare it to. And that was, of course, Conte's Juve. And I think there really are some parallels between that Juve and this current Milan. So let's see if that continues. One thing that's very positive for Milan is they've also been winning games where they haven't been particularly at their best. I think Udinese one does fall under that. That's not the first time that's happened. So that's really, really positive. So I think Milan fans have really good reasons to be very optimistic. I saw my friend Alex Frazier from Gazzetta was tweeting that there's now a lot of buzz on Ibrahimovic for the Ballon d'Or, which again, I get the real excitement from Milanisti there. So, you know, now I'm asking myself, you know, if I were to do my power rankings for the Scudetto, would I take Milan over Napoli? I would say one thing that's really changed a lot how I look at the Scudetto odds was Ronaldo's return to Juve. I'll tell you that right now. I've been telling you guys for a long time, just wait, don't go crazy on Pirlo. And I'm not saying, you know, Juve should beat easy teams without their players. All I'm saying that when it comes to evaluating Pirlo and thinking how much of a liability he is, you have to wait until you have Ronaldo and then De Ligt because they make up a lot of it. So what's changed for me in the title race is I'm definitely more bullish on Juve. But as far as Milan, if I would take them over Napoli, the exercise I always do in these cases is I always go back to my red and blue chip players from the beginning of the season. And then I ask myself, have any of the players on the squad taken a leap and gone into those categories? So for those that aren't totally familiar, blue chip player is a player that is good enough to start regularly on a title contender. A red chip player is someone who can absolutely contribute to a team that is contending for the Champions League. I had at the beginning of the season, blue chip players on Milan, Donnarumma, Theo Hernandez, Romagnoli, Ibrahimovic, for sure. Can you now make a case that Kessié, Çalhanoğlu, Bennacer, Kjaer are very close to that level? Yeah, I think you could say that. Rebic been hurt. We also have Tonali, who is taking a little bit of time to, you know, get back in there. Brahim, after the injury, Brahim Diaz has been intriguing. Leao has been really good. So there's a lot of players on Milan that I'm looking at a higher level than I did before. On Napoli, they're still a very good team. And I would say there's much variation. I had as blue chip players Koulibaly, Fabian Ruiz, Mearns, Insigne. Maybe with age, Mearns is a step below that. I think I would say Osimhen has looked fantastic for them. Zielinski is still a very good player. Di Lorenzo taking a little bit of a step back so far this season. So I actually think it's pretty close. I think you could make a case that Milan, with the way a lot of their players are doing, you could take them over Napoli. But I'm circling that game. When Milan travels to Napoli, I remember when Juve beat Milan for the first time, not the Gol di Muntari game, the game before that was in Turin. And that's when I was like, okay, this Juve is really, really back. So to me, that's the equivalent of that. Alex, before we get to Real Don Agnelli, I wanted to ask you this, and this isn't just US-centric. I know this is talking more about TV rights here in the US, but this is in general, because I know a lot of this is happening in Europe as well. So for those not too familiar, here in the U.S., the Premier League has had unbelievable coverage on NBC, which is probably the biggest network here in the U.S. You could watch a ton of Premier League games for free. The popularity of the league really improved. Superb production. We've had quite a few of the people that were hosts on there on the show. Alex has talked to even way more of those on his, and I saw Grant Wall and a lot of people tweeting about the fact that now here in the U.S. we are going to have this huge game between Man City and Liverpool. Sorry, Alex, maybe as big a game as we have in the Premier League right now behind the paywall on this Peacock app for NBC. So I want to ask you, Alex, what do you make of how the game is changing? This isn't so much about the U.S., but in general, because they are doing paywalls in the U.K. and whatnot. What do you make of this trend, Alex?
Well, I mean, you always have to ask yourself how much has to do with what's going on in the world and how things would be different if there was no COVID, if companies had full finances, et cetera, et cetera. But specifically the trend, First of all, I feel so bad for so many of my fellow Chelsea fans who live in the UK, and if they want to watch sometimes Chelsea, but of course, like just any random Premier League game, they have to pay a lot of money for one singular game. The amount of money, David, that I pay per month for Peacock or something like that, and I get all the Premier League games. So I know it's a governmental thing and stuff, but I don't love the trend. I don't. David, for me, sports, I understand to get all of them, to get all games in a league. Like here in the United States, the setup to me was always pretty logical for, like, say, the NBA, right? If you live locally, well, you get that local station that covers the Celtics, of course. And then if you want to watch really more games, of course, you'll have your nationally televised games. But you want to watch more games, you get the NBA package. And it's a little expensive, but if you're that into the NBA, then it's totally worth it. So that's normal, but it just feels like it's ramping up. And I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because, like, hey, I do things on Patreon. So it's kind of the same logic of, hey, if you have something that you know people will pay for, well, to a certain extent, take advantage of that. Not cheaply, but use that. So companies and sports, they view it very similar. They know that their product. I mean, David, how many people do you think say to themselves before the season starts here in the U.S., the NFL season, I'm not going to buy Red Zone this year. I'm not going to buy Red Zone. And then a week later, what percentage of those people do you think cave in and buy Red Zone? It's got to be astronomical. And Red Zone, for anybody listening, is just the station that never goes to commercial for all of Sunday, 7 hours, just shows you nonstop NFL. I mean, I'm not surprised by it. I'm worried by it because, David, I guess my question to you is, when will it end? Where does it end?
Yeah. Look, it's very interesting. I'll talk just very briefly about the U.S. because it's a much bigger discussion than this. I mean, look, I think the Premier League, think about how at the beginning, you know, some things are really cheap and they try to get you in, and then you get used to the product and it becomes part of your life, and then you start being charged for something. That's a business model that's very common in all walks of life, all types of industries. But I think what's really changing here in the US is so many people just don't have cable anymore. And so many people don't, it's at the point where maybe a lot of people don't even watch the game per se on the TV. It might be on a mobile device, might be on an iPad, might even be on their phone. So that's really changing a lot. So on one side, you have the viewing habits of people changing where, you know, having the TV and the old school setup is really evolving. And I think that's a huge piece of it. And I think that's not being discussed enough. And then the other thing is obviously financial. You mentioned the patron thing, and I actually think that's a really, really good example. Like, look, you know, when things were good before COVID, like our podcast, you know, we had a lot of listeners. We sold ads. We did pretty well with that. And now with COVID, all that ad revenue is gone. We have patron. And again, we really use patron on this podcast to, you know, pay production costs and all that. And thank God we have that. So there's that aspect. And think of that analogy to football and sports in general. Teams are taking huge losses because of the stadiums being almost totally empty. Even just the games, you're not sure when they're going to be on. So teams are taking huge, huge losses. The Premier League this summer, it wasn't just, we know Chelsea were kind of in their own window, but we did see big name players join a lot of Premier League teams, which was really different from the other league. So at some point, you got to pay for that. And does it shock me that here in the US, they are going with a paywall? No, because as you said, that's happening in the UK. Like I saw someone on Twitter say, well, you know, if Peacock and NBC really wants to get people to get the app, they should put an NFL game on there. Well, the difference is in the UK, the Premier League already is behind the paywall. And here in the US, the NFL isn't. And it's also very different. The games on the NFL, if you ever watch a game, the amount of commercials is just absolutely mind-blowing. You don't have that ability with soccer. So I hate to say it. I think if you're the type of person that looks at it this way, it's going to get worse. I know the reality for Serie A is a little bit different. Like going to ESPN Plus, that app, was a huge step forward for me in Serie A. I just think the times are changing. And, you know, we need to accept that, A, viewers are ingesting the game in a different way. And then there's also the huge financial reality. So speaking of reality, today is election day. We were trying to bring our friend Real Don Agnelli on last week because of a scheduling conflict. We didn't, but it actually works out even better to have him on for election day. So here comes the president. Kind of take it like thousand names. Don't take this totally serious. I think if you guys know me, you can read between the lines. So here's the president. So I could not be more pleased to welcome our next guest, Real Don Agnelli, a Twitter sensation, a very effective president. This is a very busy week for him. So we really, really appreciate him making time to be with us today. So I don't want to take up more of his time. So we're going to get right into it. So Mr. President, I have to ask you this. We saw a different Juve once Ronaldo came onto the pitch. So do you think doctors conspired to keep him out for much longer than necessary to hold back your great team, Mr. President?
Doctors, scientists, club presidents, league presidents, maybe Super League presidents. I'll tell you, David, it was very, very unfair what happened. Ronaldo had no symptoms. He was, by the way, it's no coincidence, he was my best signing ever. He had no symptoms. And suddenly, and this is right before the Champions League, David, suddenly he has to go all these tests. What tests? You think anyone else has to go through this? Conveniently, right before the big Barcelona match. I'll tell you what, David, Mini Messi, who's never been tested in his life, got to avoid Ronaldo. He got to avoid him since I signed him, and he's very lucky for that. And do you remember, David, he took drugs, and he admits it, and Barcelona gave it to him. He was a pipsqueak, and all of a sudden they start giving him growth hormones. Is that legal? I don't think it's legal. It wouldn't be legal for a Juventus player, I can tell you that much. Normal rules don't apply to me. He's a hobbit now. He would have been even smaller. He would have been like a child hobbit if he didn't take the hormones. I guarantee if Messi had coronavirus, he wouldn't have to miss a single game, single match. They wouldn't even test him, so who knows if he already has it. I'm not saying he had it last week when he came to Turin, but who knows that he did it? Did he get tested? Where are the tests? Where are the results? You can't find them. I'll tell you why. Because no one is talking about Messi. Nobody will say it, but everybody knows it. He could have been infected the entire squad or the city for all we know.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, people get desperate. You have a great team and they have to find ways to hold you back. So, Mr. President, one thing that people know you for is always hiring the best people. You take great pride in this and you do it. But are you worried that maybe Pirlo isn't going to fully work out as your next coach and this is going to hurt your reputation of that being so great at finding the right people for the right roles?
Why wouldn't it work out? Who said he's not working out? Nobody's saying that. I have many advisors. They tell me things. Sometimes I listen to them, and sometimes I fire them if they don't make good. Look what I did to Giuseppe Sleepy Eye Marotta. He's gone. He doesn't make good decisions. Everybody loves Pirlo. But what they said, and sometimes I listen to them. I have no choice. I'm very busy. I have a lot of things to do. Lots of transfers and investments. Lots of interests all over the world. They all love Pirlo. Paratici, he says a lot of things to me. He tells me he loves Pirlo. Well, who doesn't love Pirlo? Maybe Joe Hart, but he doesn't love anyone. In fact, I don't think anyone loves him. Maybe his mother? I don't know. Does he have a mother? I make a lot of hires, and I defer some of them. That's what strong leaders do. When there's no one to delegate, sometimes I do that. But when I make a decision, it's the best one. We needed to get rid of that smoke and sorry, and we did. My reputation is the best when it comes to hires. Everyone knows this.
One of your most famous employees and someone who's done great work for you, Director Paratici, there was a lot was made about a recent visit that he had into the ref's locker room at halftime last week. Do you want to comment on that? What did you make of that whole thing?
It was a perfect visit to the locker room. He had very, very, very legitimate, very up and up things to talk about. I mean, let's just face it. He deserved, the referees were so poor. They were doing such a terrible job. They're abusing VAR, which, by the way, at this point, they need to defund. They need to defund VAR. It's not working for anyone. All it's doing is creating witch hunts, and it's being used ironically. Gee, like nobody could have seen this coming. It's being used against me. Okay, you ever notice that? Ever see Inter get in trouble with VAR? No. So he had to go talk to the referees, which is, it happens. It happens. Everybody talks to the referees. We know that. We know I'm not the only one. We know nobody is. I mean, I told you about Fichetti. I told you what happened to him. He was on the phone saying, I want this referee. Give me this referee. This referee needs to understand we're playing the third place team. We need to finish at least in that spot. You're saying things like that. You don't. What do you think they're talking about, David? You don't talk like that unless you're trying to conspire to fix matches. That's not what Luciano Moggi did.
But Mr. President, you know, there's a lot of people that are saying you are the one to send Paratici to the locker room, or did he act on his own?
Listen. I tell my employees to do their jobs. Okay. I say to my people, we all understand what the referees are up to, how very corrupt they are, how very corrupt the league is. I say, stand back, stand by. Don't take everything into your own hands. But you know what? Sometimes they do things. Sometimes they love the company. They love working for me. They want to make sure that we're all treated fairly because this is like a family. Okay, you want your family members to be treated fairly. We weren't treated fairly in Calciopoli. Luciano Moggi, a good family man, made a perfect phone call, and they banned him for life. Okay? Paratici, he just had a little meeting, very quick, to say that we were being legitimately treated unfair. Okay? Nothing wrong with that. I didn't send him. We talk about it, me and Paratici. He knows how I feel about it, because he feels the same way. Because anybody with a brain and with dignity in Calcio feels the same way.
So one more thing, Mr. President, we know this is a busy week for you, big day. You are making a lot of efforts to drain the swamp. And on that subject, I have to ask you, what is up with all these disallowed goals for Morata? Another conspiracy against you, a beautiful signing that you made. You defied all the pundits that didn't have Morata come into Juve. He comes, he can't stop scoring, but there's all these disallowed goals. What do you make of this?
Alvaro Morata is gorgeous. He's my greatest signing in a very long time. My best striker in a very long time. Certainly my best striker, I believe, this year. He looks like a matador on top of a wedding cake. Beautiful boy. And beautiful goals. He's been scoring goals like you wouldn't believe. And you wouldn't believe it if you looked at his tally sheet, because VAR is not run by the best people. There's no standards. There's no solutions to it. And when do they check VAR? Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. Usually they check it when it's a Juventus goal that they wanted to qualify. That's the only time you've seen VAR lately. And when they do, it's been terrible, David. Just terrible. Just awful and unfair. Really bad. Total joke. Alvaro Morata has great intelligence. He's always aware of his surroundings. That's why I signed him. He's onside all of the time. And when he's not, he doesn't play the ball. It's simple. He knows what to do, David. He stays onside. And then they say, oh, I guess it's time to check VAR now. It's go for Juventus. I mean, come on. Then, oh, his shoelace was past the defender. Give me a break. He will score many more goals, and they'll be great goals. It's a matter of who will get him, who will be out to get him, because they're always out to get him. They're always out to get me. Maybe he shouldn't have come here. Maybe if he went to Inter, he could have been the Capo Cannonieri this year. But you know what? He loved Juventus too much, and he wanted to come here. It's crazy, David. It's totally crazy. All this stuff I have to go with. They're lucky I stay in this league anymore.
Well, Mr. President, we can't thank you enough for making time for us. We know this is a busy week. We hope all things go well so we can have you on again as the president. But keep up the great work. Keep fighting the good fight for your club and your great employees.
Thank you very much for not being like some of those other fake news people that I have to deal with most of the time.
All right. Well, always a fun adventure when he is on. And now we'll start positive and it'll end negative. But now let's get to another fun segment, winners and losers. David, let's be optimistic. Who are our winners first?
Absolutely. Yeah. So as I mentioned, guys, I didn't watch as much Calcio as I usually do. So we're going to make this a shorter thing. I want to cover the big, big storylines and the things that I watch. First big winner, of course, Ibrahimovic, 22 matches since he returned at Milan. Goals and assists combined, 23. Unbelievable. I think even the most optimistic Milan fan with Ibrahimovic, I think you'd have been hard-pressed to predict this. Frank Kessié, another game. Welcome to the blue chip ranking, Frank Kessié. I've been beyond impressed with him. And we had another good performance by Brahim Diaz. Then we had Juve going to Spezia, and I kept telling you guys, wait until Ronaldo, and then there will be De Ligt. So before Ronaldo came into the game, Juve was on their way to another draw against a lower table team. It would have been the second one against a newly promoted team. Then Ronaldo comes in, and the game completely changes. Does that mean Pirlo is all of a sudden a great, better manager? No. It just champions make up for so many things on the team. So I'm not surprised Ronaldo has made Juve look radically different. Also want to give a shout out to McKennie. I had made a joke on Twitter about him last week. Nice to see him come through with a nice game. And we had Morata with another strong performance as well. But I do want to give a shout out to Spezia manager Italiano, who is a former Padova player, so I have affection for him. But I have to say, I have been very impressed with the way Spezia play. I think he's this season's version of Liverani, so Spezia will likely be relegated, but I could see Italiano showing enough that he gets another job in Serie A. I also want to give a shout-out to defender Chabot on Spezia, who arrived from Sampdoria. A player I had my eye on last season, kind of fell apart in the second season, but I thought he played pretty well. Now, and then I think my favorite storyline of the weekend was Sassuolo's big win against Napoli. I can't tell you guys how much I enjoyed sending a message to Napoli Outsider, who always tells me, oh, I want to really love your boy De Zerbi. He just never does it for me. His defense stinks. And then Sassuolo gets a clean sheet against Napoli. You truly love to see that. So we had Locatelli, another great game. You guys know I'm all in on Locatelli. Then we had Maxime Lopez, the other intriguing midfielder they signed from Marseille, who had a fun interview where he talked that Did Zerbi convince them in 5 minutes to join his team and that he loves it over there at Sassuolo? What a signing for him. And then goalkeeper Consigli with a strong performance, keeping the clean sheet against Napoli and Napoli. Outsider, then we had Lazio with a crazy comeback, 2 goals in stoppage time against Torino. And our last winner is Pedro, who already now has 3 goals in 6 games, has been really, really excellent since joining Roma. So those are our winners.
Okay. Congrats to them. And no comment to the next group, David.
All right, let's go to the losers. So another disappointing game for Inter. Last second, they make a comeback against Parma to draw at home against them. They had lost last season at home against Parma early in the season, if you remember. Handanovic, I have to say, look, you know, I always say when Donnarumma makes a mistake, we never bring up his age. But Handanovic definitely has looked a little bit shaky this year. I would be concerned at this point if I was an Inter fan. And we had in the Milan game, the keeper that often has been pegged as Handanovic's potential replacement at Inter is Musso from Udinese. And he wasn't great against Milan. And he's usually one of the best keepers in Serie A. Then another loser is Dybala, who once again looks like a lost player. Look, you know, plenty of reasons to criticize Sarri's work, the way he handled things at Juve. But he had figured out Dybala, who's now just roaming aimlessly on the pitch. I would definitely keep an eye on this one. And then we had Fiorentina with a loss to Roma. Iacchini, one of the worst decisions of the whole summer was Fiorentina confirming Iacchini. It's really, really hurting him, holding him back. I have to say my bold prediction of the season was that Verona was going to finish ahead of Fiorentina. It's looking almost too easy right now for me. Verona also beat Benevento yesterday with 2 goals by Barak, one of the favorites from Jesse, one of our patrons. And then last loser, Torino, who were the victims of that huge comeback from Lazio. Definitely in trouble. Gianpaolo said he needs an exorcist, that the team is just cursed. That team is definitely in trouble, and I think Gianpaolo is not going to eat the panettone for the second year in a row. Okay, before we take a deep dive on the mid-table and lower table with our friend Enrico Passarella, we are going to do a segment of the podcast just for our patrons. As always, if you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. You'll hear longer versions of the show. We do bonus interviews. We'll have Napoli Outsider on an exclusive interview on soon. And we have different tiers. We also have articles. All the money raised there covers our production costs. We pay our freelance writers. And whatever's left, we make a donation to the Insuperabili, a great nonprofit in Italy who run football camps for kids with disability. Thanks to the generosity to our patrons, we are on pace to donate €1,000 this year, which is really, really fantastic. I couldn't be prouder of our efforts there. So thanks to our patrons. And if you want more Calcioland in your life, you will also be doing some good. All right. Next up, our friend David Bacharach. Love getting your questions, David. When it comes to Milan these past couple of months, I feel like I'm living in a fairy tale. I ever keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. How much longer must Milan keep doing well before I can stop having flashbacks to the Banter era? I'm going to stick to what I said at the top, David. That Napoli game, I have that circled. If Milan leaves there without losing, has a deep performance, then I definitely believe. And then he asks, is Locatelli the best youth team player for the past decade that Milan produced? Like, look, Donnarumma, he's a keeper. Donnarumma, to me, is a world-class player. Can Locatelli maybe get there? Not out of the question. But, you know, I still pick Donnarumma, but an outfield player is probably harder to develop. The other ones, there's Petagna, there's a few, Calabria. But, yeah, I think Locatelli right now. I do like Petagna a lot, but I'm going to take Locatelli. I might be forgetting someone, but if you don't want a keeper, Locatelli is the pick. Okay, let's do Dimitri, and then I'll do a few more and pass it over to you. With Dalic coming back from injury and Danilo enjoying a good form so far this season, do you see Pirlo benching Bonucci in favor of Dalic, Demiral, Danilo as a starting defensive combo? Now, Juve fans always think Bonucci is going to get benched, and then at the end of the season, you tally it up. He's the center back that played typically the most. I'm going to go ahead that I think it's going to happen again this season. I like Demiral, but God, man, his passing is abysmal. I mean, really abysmal. Delic's Juve's best defender. Chiellini, unfortunately, to me, is really a part-time player. I really like Danilo, but I really don't see him as a center back. That formation is really a little bit odd. So I'm going to stick to my bold prediction that I'm making right now on the spot that Bonucci is going to lead Juve center backs as far as minutes played. And I know Juve fans, every time they think he's going to get benched, then he doesn't. Then we have angry Don J. Agnelli supporter. The media blackout of our president continued us Friday. Not surprised. Lying Dave's promises carry about as much weight as Inter's cardboard Scudetti. Meanwhile, the only positive to come from useless VAR, once again trying to steal goals from beautiful Morata, is that we get to see from his great attitude in the face of such corruption, absurd Chelsea groupie Alex Goldberg wishes he still had a striker with such a strong mentality.
Wow, that's the first time I've been called a Chelsea groupie. I love that.
Yeah, this guy's good. I haven't figured out who this is. It's not Domenico, but this is good. I love it. But you did get your president this time. And, you know, I hate promising guests until I record, and I made that mistake last week. But we made it up. I'll tell you what, Alex, if you can do Kevin's two questions, and then I'll take us home.
All right. Kevin writes, do you think Inter would have been better off using the Christian Eriksen money last January to sign Petagna as Vice Lukaku?
Man, I know a lot, and there's another question on Eriksen coming. Inter got Eriksen, had a few months left on his contract, paid $20 million to Spurs, which I think Spurs have to feel so great about getting that money right now. Then COVID happened. I mean, that was unbelievable piece of business for Spurs in retrospect. Now, Inter still has an asset. Eriksen's amortized value isn't that high, that $20 million. Granted, not a lot of time has passed. He's definitely worth more than that. I think you can flip Eriksen, because I think it would likely have to be a swap deal. I think you can get a better asset than Petagna, and I do like Petagna. So I'm going to say no, just because, again, I think Eriksen in January is going to notch a better player than Petagna would have been. But it's not that crazy to make that case either, because Petagna is very similar to Lukaku. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's a striker in Serie A who would be a better backup for Lukaku than Petagna, because he really is a poor man's version of that.
Okay. Kevin writes this, with one more year on his contract after this year, what do you think Juve will do with Ronaldo? Do you think they will try to sell him? And is structure of the Chiesa loan as a two-year loan any indication that Juve might already be using that money that will be freed up from Ronaldo, or for another reason?
You know, I saw other people tweeting about this and making it, you know, should Juve extend Ronaldo? I mean, this contract is 2 years left, you know, after next season. There's not that much time left, and there's a lot of urgency with Dybala. And you look at Ibrahimovic, and, you know, Ronaldo's age certainly doesn't look like that much of a problem. But I think what people are missing is the better question is, would Ronaldo want to extend with Juve? I think people are totally missing the point. I think it's really more on his side to decide if he wants to stay with Juve. I hate to say it today. I know Juve fans are not going to like having to hear that, but I strongly believe that. I think, look, Ronaldo really, really improved Juve's brand. He's done his part in the Champions League performance-wise. Now the team hasn't. I think Juve redoes that Ronaldo deal anytime. I mean, granted, COVID makes that salary very different, but to me, it was worth the investment. To me, the better question is, would Ronaldo want to stay at Juve? As far as I don't think there's any relationship to the two-year loan deal for Chiesa and the Ronaldo money, because the wages are so dramatically different. I've said it along. When Ronaldo leaves Juve, there is going to be a big, big star with like a huge salary coming in. I've kind of circled Salah, someone like that. Maybe it'll be a younger player like Haaland. There's going to be a big star. I don't think Chiesa, I do not see like Juve is like, well, you know, we're going to do Chiesa 2 year down the road because we free up the Ronaldo money. No, it's just they didn't have the money at all for this fiscal year and the one after. I look at it as that way, is they're looking at their fiscal years, and the more they can delay those payments, I don't think it has anything to do with Ronaldo when his contract expires. Okay, then one more on Eriksen, Super Mario. Let's take a step back and analyze the Eriksen situation from another angle. Do you think this acquisition was simply an economical chance taken by Marotta, looking at simply from a sporting director's angle? We can probably say it's a failure because he clearly doesn't fit Inter Conte's tactics at all. Also, he doesn't seem a very good fit. I'd love to be wrong, but I don't see him adapting. Do you agree that his signing wasn't a masterpiece at all from a sporting director perspective? Interesting. A lot to chew on. I know we kind of talked about this a little bit already. I still think it's a good asset. That $20 million was not great. I thought there was a moment where Eriksen looked good right when we came back from the pandemic and he was starting. The problem is him and Brozovic. I think Inter has to pick one or the other. But I think at this point, especially the way Conte keeps whipping Eriksen, they might both be gone. So I don't know. I will say this. You'll be able to flip Eriksen for something that fits better in January. And I think in general, it wasn't exactly a Bosman deal, this Eriksen one, but it kind of was. So I still think it's an asset that's going to be work fit. Think of like this is maybe Emre Can 2.0. Look at it that way. I think those are pretty similar deals in that way. Then next up, Dieter. Should Inter consider a swap deal between Ousmane Dembele and Lautaro Martinez if Barcelona comes knocking again for Martinez? I have to say, he looked good playing against Juve. I don't know. If Conte is still the manager, my answer is no. I'm not sure he's a good fit there. But if Inter kind of changes formation with a different manager, have Dembele supporting Lukaku, kind of intriguing. And then he asks, will we see more loans with options to buy during the winter market too? Yeah, absolutely. You will not see a lot of straight sales at all. Yeah, so you will see a lot of swap deals and a lot of loans with option to buy. And then John Lamarte asked, I know you don't like referee talk, but what's the threshold for firing referees? I mean, again, what an atrocious weekend for Serie A refs. Since Serie A refs don't want to check VAR on a weekly basis, should FIGC use VAR to check referee errors and get rid of incompetent referees? Yep, I'm in favor of this. The NBA has a similar program where they review the calls with the referees. Look, you know, it's a tough job. And I think we all too often think it's corruption and incompetence when deep down it's very hard. Just think how hard it is to even decide if it's a foul or not with like crazy replays from different angles. Imagine having to do that, you know, live. So in general, I think we should be a little more tolerant of referees. But yeah, I think there definitely needs to be more accountability. Okay. Next up, James, what do you make of the rumors regarding Icardi possibly returning to Serie A with Milan? Is just Wanda creating a story to push him back to Italy? Playing time at PSG is hard to come by, and I know he never wanted to leave Inter. I would absolutely relish the opportunity to play against his old team, particularly in the derby. David, I remember you stating that you felt his stay in Paris would always be short, and that the moment he left Inter, you predicted he'd eventually land at Juve. Would he be the ideal successor to Zlatan? I mean, talk about opposite personality, Zlatan and Icardi. I know Icardi was a captain, but man, that's very, very different. I've always kind of felt Juve, but look, Morata's been good. I think Milik could be a factor for Juve, so I see Icardi maybe less of a possibility for Juve. I know there's a lot of buzz on Milan. I'd rather have Belotti if I'm Milan than Icardi. And we've talked about it too, the type of impact that Belotti has. But I do think we'll see Icardi back in Serie A at some point. I'm going to be very curious to see where he goes. Could Roma maybe be a possibility? I'm not going to exclude that. I'm going to say if I had to guess today at this moment, if Icardi goes back to Serie A, I'm going to pick Roma. Next up, James. For it's early in the season, Sassuolo have been particularly impressive. Do you foresee them making an Atalanta-like leap in Europe? The Champions League is probably too ambitious, but the Europa League seems attainable. If it were to happen, do you feel that Zerbi is the next manager to make the leap to a big club? Where do you think he would make a good fit? Yeah, so we got into it. You'll hear it in a second with Enrico. We talked about Sassuolo. Yeah, I definitely think Europa League is realistic for them. I love the way they play. There's a lot of love for the Zerbi right now. I think he's the one Italian manager best suited to win in Europe
and play really, really well in Europe. You know how we see these German managers from the Bundesliga get creative and do things really well? De Zerbi is the Italian version of that. Absolutely love him. Look, you know, it's at the point where Milan fans are so happy with Pioli, they don't even consider the idea of De Zerbi. But I'm with Alex Frazio. You look at the DNA, the way Milan wants to play and all, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think Juve, after what happened with Sarri, are going to take another chance on a manager that's such a strict system manager, because I don't know if big stars really want to be go through as much tactics as De Zerbi does. So I'm going to say Lazio would be a very fun team for De Zerbi next, if it's not going to be Milan, because rightfully so, Pioli should stay. And then let's close with Magin. Perfect. A little pop culture to end. Rest in peace, Sean Connery. What was your favorite non-bomb movie for Sean? For me, it's The Untouchables. So yeah, I have to say, you know, I was born in 77. Growing up, Sean Connery as James Bond was the epitome of cool when I was a little kid. I later realized what a bad actor he is, like really flat out bad, but he was just so cool, had so much charisma. That Scottish accent, obviously a big part of his success. So obviously you watched him, you were taken by the charisma, but man, that guy was not a good actor. I definitely agree The Untouchables, other than the Bond movies, is the one I recommend. So thank you guys for the questions. Always enjoyable. And now let's get to our friend Enrico Passarella.
Okay. It's been a little while since we chatted with one of our frequent guests, a fantastic contributor both to the podcast and our Patreon page with his excellent articles, our dear friend Enrico Passarella from right outside my hometown of Padova. So today we're going to talk just a little bit about the top of the table, but as always with Enrico, I like to take a deep dive on the mid-lower table. We always learn a ton talking to him. So Enrico, always a pleasure to welcome you back to the podcast. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Hi, David, and thank you for the invitation, and looking forward to chat a little bit about you.
Okay, so the first question I think would have been sounded better if I asked you on Friday, because we've been debating this last week. And I know Juve looked, once Ronaldo came back on the pitch, as expected, he was going to make a big impact. But it's still a pretty interesting exercise because there's a lot of new teams at the top. Milan, of course, in the mix. Napoli, who, despite losing to Sassuolo, look good. So let me ask you this. What do you think is more likely, Enrico, that Milan's going to win the Scudetto or that Juve could finish out of a Champions League spot, so out of the top four this season?
Yeah, I saw that that's a debate on Twitter over the weekend as well. But I think I agree with the majority in saying that I would be more surprised if Juventus finished outside of the top four, and then Milan won Scudetto, because I don't see really four teams doing better than Juventus. And despite the struggles to open the season, they are still right there at top of the standings. And it is possible maybe that their most difficult stretch is already behind them, and probably they are likely to improve going forward. On the other hand, Milan, maybe it isn't the primary candidate for today, even though they are on top right now. But I don't think it would be crazy if they managed to keep up a pace that would allow them to be in contention, or even win if a couple of breaks go their way. Right now, it is mostly being Zlatan carrying them, but like in the final stretch of last season, Hakan Çalhanoğlu and Ante Rebic were spared while they are being injured. Did a subpar so far, and if they get going, they find some other contributors, I think they have the tools to stay right there on the top.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think in this season, in this environment, with everything going on, it's not totally out of the question that Milan go all the way. I'm still not totally ruling out Juve finishing out of the top four, but I knew once Ronaldo, and they still have De Ligt, of course, to come back, that are going to be very different. Champions like that cover a lot of issues on the team. So let's stay at the top of the table for one more question. So, you know, obviously Milan look like they're definitely going to be a factor at the top of the table. Atalanta have represented Italy in the Champions League for two seasons in a row. Napoli aren't in the Champions League this season, but they've been there frequently. Out of Napoli and Atalanta, looking at this resurgent Milan, and there might be even other teams, who do you think is more in danger of finishing out of the top four, Napoli or Atalanta?
Right now, I would say Atalanta, because at the start of the season, they have looked the worst out of these three teams. But I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up looking off maybe 10, 12 games in a row where they don't lose most of them, because they are new to this slow start. Obviously, this is a very particular season with a short break between the first one. But Atalanta is new to start in slow and then ripping off these big runs once everybody is in shape and are acclimated with one another. So I would indicate them now, because I think Napoli, with their new design, their new team, and Milan so far have been more convincing. They are more solid in the back, while Atalanta still has those problems that sometimes they attack a little too recklessly and leave some room behind, and we have seen a couple of exploit that. So right now, Atalanta, Milan and Napoli seem the more complete side to me. But I would ask you instead, how do you rank their chances against Inter, who hasn't had the most convincing start? Do you see them all three finishing over Inter, or do you think the Inter in the end is too deep and has too much quality compared to Atalanta, Milan, and Napoli?
So I love this question. I picked Inter to win the Scudetto. Let's put it this way. I don't feel great about it right now. I didn't feel great making that pick, and I feel worse now. I don't know. I still really like Inter squad better than any of these teams for sure, but there is something definitely a little off over there. I need to see Bastoni back in the defense to feel better. So I'm going to try not to be a prisoner of the moment. I'm going to say I still feel a little bit better about Inter than any of these three teams. I totally agree on what you said, that Atalanta right now looks shaky, but you can absolutely see them go on like a 12, 14 game run where they win like 11 and like three draws. You can see that happening. I completely agree there. So it sounds like you are a little more confident on Napoli. Do you think they can sneak into the title race as well?
Title race, I don't know, because if Juve and Inter really get out, probably it would be tough for anybody to stay close. And Inter and Napoli and Milan maybe have more slip-ups, and surely don't have the same depth in the roster. So I would still put them behind Juve and Inter, and on a par with the
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Ronaldo coming back just makes me look at the whole Scudetto thing very differently. It's just a game changer, but I agree with your assessment there. Okay, let's get to what we really wanted to talk about with you. Great analysis, of course, on the top as well. I really wanted to get your thoughts there.
But let's get to Sassuolo, who after Milan, or I would say, are definitely the best storyline in Serie A so far this season. Did you think Sassuolo were going to be even better than last season? I have to say, I was very bullish on them last season. I thought they were going to keep it up, but they definitely look like they are making, they're taking another step. Did you expect this?
Yeah, I kind of expected that because they were able to keep everybody, and that is all, and the most complicated thing to do for a team, but it also is often the most precious addition you can have during the summer. So consistency helps. They added a couple of pieces. That's a little good, like Maximin Lopez and Sana Jan. So overall, I think they are a better team than last year, and they have this bonus of being all together in the same system under a very good coach like De Zerbi. And I am also glad to see that they have they've added some adaptability to the system in the last game against Napoli. They generally tend to go always on the offense, but given the situation, they were missing several players. They faded a little more ferociously, and it ended up paying off for them. So I think they have grew a lot, and if maybe one of the favorites end up falling behind for whatever reason, I think they could easily end up with a top six finish.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I very much enjoyed making fun of my friend Napoli Outsider yesterday, who always sends me messages on De Zerbi, how he can't defend. And he goes, it doesn't matter. They could have Cannavaro and Nesta. He just can't defend. And then he gets a clean sheet against Napoli. I very much enjoyed that. But let me ask you this. What do you think is Sassuolo's ceiling this season in general as a club? I think they are definitely a very intriguing storyline. Where do you see them going this season? Do you see that Sassuolo as maybe becoming a new version of Atalanta?
Yeah, we also must not forget that Sassuolo may be a small town, but they are backed by a very rich ownership.
Yeah, absolutely.
As Atalanta, so unless they have a fire sale over the next couple of years, obviously they are going to lose a piece or two because that is inevitable. And maybe I can see Berardi being the Papu Gomez, and they managing to keep rebuilding around him. And so I think they are poised to stay in contention. Maybe not for Champions League right away, but always over there around the Europa League spot. We know that they haven't yet made it once, so probably that is their seasonal goal this year.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I'm glad you brought up the Squinzi family. The owner, Sassuolo, passed away last year, is one of the richest men in Italy. I think at one point he was even richer than Berlusconi. So yeah, and I think his family, his children, I was reading an article about them in Gazzetta, really doing a great job. So very intriguing storyline. And, you know, when people tell me, oh, De Zerbi should go to Fiorentina, I was like, I'm not so sure that's really an upgrade right now. So speaking of Fiorentina, let's compare a couple of teams based on what you've seen so far. And how do you feel about their squads in general? If you had to pick at the end of the season, who do you think is going to be ahead, Cagliari or Fiorentina?
At this time, I would say Cagliari, because Eusebio Francesco has settled in really nicely. I think the players have bought in his beliefs, his system, which wasn't a given considering what had happened at Sampdoria. They had a pretty strong lineup with two clear leaders that are producing by Simeone and João Pedro, they brought in some young players that they can maybe develop over the season. And so I think they are in a better spot right now. But the wild card could be Fiorentina maybe pulling the plug and changing their coach at some point. Because I think probably overall Fiorentina have a better roster than Cagliari. But right now I don't think it is being used for deployed in the most efficient version. It could be, I think they had a lot of talent, but this conservative style is holding them back a little. But maybe a new manager can put all the things together and make them flourish.
Yeah, let me ask you quickly, because I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know how well you rate Di Francesco. Do you see him as an average Serie A manager, of slightly above average, below? Like, where do you kind of see Di Francesco in general?
To be honest, I think he has been a little punished throughout his went at Sampdoria and in the second season at Roma, but I certainly put consider him an above average Serie A coach, especially for what he had done at Sassuolo before going to Roma. I also at Roma he arrived in the league semifinal, so I think he's a pretty good coach. He has had a couple of bad things, but I think he brings a lot to the team.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense, and I agree with you. The reason I ask is it really goes to show what a liability Iachini is to Fiorentina right now, because you're saying, okay, yeah, Di Francesco's slightly above average, and Fiorentina, you think, have a better squad. Yeah, that was a big mistake, and it doesn't seem like they're going to pull the plug immediately, but maybe sooner rather than later. Let's talk about two other teams, this kind of same concept. Who do you think is going to finish ahead between Hellas Verona? I was very bullish on them going into the season. We're recording this before they play Benevento, by the way, or Bologna.
I would go with Bologna, even though they have had a rough start. Certainly, the last win was very hard for them, but they haven't looked. They had played well. Generally, they've had some unlucky results and some actually a lot of injuries so far that made the squad very young and therefore pretty inconsistent. But if Barrow has now broken out of his initial slump, Orsolini and the relax the Avengers goals and back after the break. I think that overall they have more quality, and more importantly, they are pretty much the same team as the last season with the same coach, while Verona basically had to restart from scratch with all the changes they've had during the last transfer market window. So that will probably be a factor later on. Bologna will have shaken off their early walls. Bologna, we know at this point, Verona is going to be a fundamentally sound team, no matter who is on the pitch. But probably Bologna is a little more ambitious, and at the end of the season will push for a better finish, while Verona could maybe settle with it.
Yeah, I think Bologna clearly has a higher ceiling. I think they have much more young talent. I agree. They just can't seem to defend at all. Hellas Verona just make it miserable for the opponent. But because this is a miserable year and there's a malaise around it, I'm going to go misery is going to win over talent. So I'm going to go with Hellas Verona. Let's see what happens. You have Bologna. So let's talk about Sampdoria a little bit. You mentioned it earlier, how disastrous it was for Di Francesco there, and I agree. But Ranieri has righted the ship. He replaced Di Francesco at Roma and Sampdoria. And I think Ranieri, anyone can say this, he's been fantastic this season. So let me ask you this. Let's say Sampdoria had what we would consider an average lower table manager. Let's say Maran, you can pick, you know, the equivalent, not someone who's a liability, someone that's pretty good, not great. Like, how much different would Sampdoria look if they say they had a Maran type instead of Ranieri?
I think that they would be significantly worse because Ranieri is such a coming present, such a leader. And he has been able to bring out the best out of a lot of players. And he's also stabilizing a man in a team that maybe people know as a pretty bizarre owner. So they balance each other out with the experience of Ranieri. And I also wonder if he has been a factor in the fact that Sampdoria has been able to attract high quality players like, for instance, Candreva or Badesita or Argentina. I wonder if Ranieri was a draw for those players as well. And therefore, I think he is really a difference maker.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been, I kind of like a few players on Sampdoria this season that I had, to be honest, never heard of. Do any of them stand out to you? Anyone on Sampdoria that you're like, huh, this guy's not bad?
Well, among the newcomers, I would say Mika Damsgaard has been pretty good right away. And that is a little surprising since he's 20. And yeah, we know that an experienced coach that generally doesn't really trust his rookies right away, but very pacey, very technical, striker with a strong personality, likes to take opponents on and dribble past them. While among those they already have, I think Tomás Auzelo has really gone to a new level. He's probably maybe the best crosser in Serie A right now. And I think he has a very bright future. He's not super young, but he's one a player that has been on the rise for two or three straight years.
Wow. I feel good, Enrico, because those are the two. Damsgaard, definitely impressive. I don't want to even say little Kulusevski. I like him. And Augello, yeah, I agree. Especially left back is such a tough position to fill in Serie A. And he's been good. I agree with you. Definitely a player to watch. So keep an eye on those two. If you guys play fantasy calcio, those Damsgaard and Augello, take a look at them. All right, let's talk about teams, on the other hand, that are underachieving. And this could be a tough season for them. So between Torino and Parma, who do you think should be more concerned that they're going to be in the relegation race this season?
I think it should be Torino because the impact of Gianpaolo has been, I would say, lukewarm at best, if not outright poor. They obviously they improved a little in the last couple of matches, but they had some shocking late game meltdowns. So there is something definitely wrong going on. And also, I don't think the roster really fits what the coach wanted really well, in particular with the fact that they haven't been able to sign a quality playmaker that would have made all the difference for the style Gianpaolo wants to use it. And on the other hand, Parma has been doing great so far, but I think they have a lot of untapped potential because they have had to deal with COVID. They had pretty much all the newcomers have yet to really be integrated into the regular rotation. And so I think they have more upside given the tougher circumstances they have to deal with it so far. If they hopefully catch a break on that front, I think they are poised to have a more serene continuation of it.
Okay. I think you're definitely more bullish on Parma than I. I'm not saying that Torino isn't the right answer here, but you seem pretty optimistic, and I think Parma are in big trouble this season. So let's talk about the newly promoted teams, which, as always, when we introduce a new season, you told us about, you got us acclimated to. So now, again, we're recording this before Benevento plays Verona, but we've had a sample of all these teams in Serie A. What have been your impressions so far of Crotone, Spezia, Benevento? Do you think it's too soon to say Crotone are going to be the one that struggles the most, and that Benevento might be the one that has the easiest way, or is that too simplistic?
No, I think there is a lot to it, a lot of truth into that statement. I think that Spezia is probably the most interesting roster, and also from the standpoint of their young players and the way they play, such a daring style, after close to a fault. But the fact that probably Benevento, as you said, is going to be the most steady, the most equipped team to navigate the season. Even though I have to say I've been a little disappointed in their defensive phase, because last year they were a really great defensive team, while they've had some large losses. I think they are destined to tighten things up, and since they have a very experienced squad. And yeah, Crotone said they stuck in the middle between Spezia and Benevento, because they would like to outscore the opponent, but they don't really have the offense to do that, and they aren't great defensively, so they are in a dangerous spot right now.
Yeah, I have to say I do like Messias on Crotone. Interesting player, but yeah, I didn't know anything about them, but the way you said it, that they want to outscore, having him and Simi, I can see why. Okay, I always like to say you are the one who put Kulusevski on my radar, and then it was love at first sight, but you are the one that told me the first time, check out this guy. So you are our talent scout. So Enrico, you can go. This isn't just mid-table. You could pick players on top teams. Give us three players that you didn't know much about going into this season that have impressed you so far.
Well, to be honest, I haven't seen Kulusevski yet. Maybe Domsgaard, but really early on full of games so far, and nobody has made such a big impression. Somebody who has, a serious expectation is Verona's Ivan Ilic, who has been very bad since they haven't had Miguel Veloso because of an injury. He is pretty much a pure regista that is a role that is tough to take care of, especially for a youngster, but he has played with a great command. He has a quality fit and a really strong distributor. And two others that have two youngsters that have impressed me have been two fullbacks, one at Torino, Madin Vojvoda, and one at Udinese, Thomas Wilkan, two very dynamic, very offensive-minded fullbacks. And I think Vojvoda has already picked up a couple of assists with his crosses, and also instead of Wilkan, he's taking some set pieces, so he's a quality crosser as well. And I think it is a role that is generally lacks the talent, but there have been two good additions for their team coming from the league.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, definitely. You look, most top teams, the one area where they are pretty weak is wing back. So great shouts there. Enrico, always a pleasure to chat with you. Always a good time. I always learn a ton. Look forward also to your articles on the Patreon page. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and for joining me today. Keep up the great work, my friend.
Thank you, David, and looking forward to doing it again.